Well practiced run.
No. So here we are back on track. Thank you for observing the time for the comfort break. So we are going to discuss agenda paper 7 on presentation and disclosure. I pass the floor to Jane.
Okay, thank you very much, Mauro. Welcome back, everybody. Paper 7 on presentation and disclosure. I said this morning in the first session that the board haven't really spent much time discussing presentation and almost no time at all talking about disclosures. But one thing that we talked about was that the model at the moment is being built to supplement existing IFRS standards. So we said in the overview session this morning that at the moment we are looking at a separate line item presentation, both in the statement of financial performance in profit or loss and also in the statement of financial position in the balance sheet, recognising these as separate items. Those of you that are familiar with IFRS 14, as we said this morning, we're not at the moment planning on the same isolation approach that we have in IFRS 14, where these things are kept separate from other assets and other liabilities, because with IFRS 14, the board hadn't decided what these things were. So that's a big driver for keeping them separate. So we're looking at separate presentation, but including them within the main body of the primary financial statements. But some of the questions that have cropped up as we've been thinking about this is the level of aggregation or disaggregation that is both feasible and would be useful and relevant to the users of the financial statements. So the questions that we've included here cover both of those aspects. I think we touched on some of it this morning in the session where we talked about how easy is it to identify and track these items. So some of what you prepared may have already been covered, but with that I'll open up the floor for any comments people have got on presentation and disclosure.
Michael? Yeah, I mean, just I think on that, maybe just trying to the fruit. I mean, I think it's good news in terms of what you suggested, in terms of income statement balance sheet things. I mean, I think in terms of footnotes, I think if you look at existing financial statements, you will probably find that level of disclosure under US GAAP, which quite frankly you could probably transport in because of how it's done. You know, for those companies reporting under IFRS, at least on my clients, they currently provide disclosures, if you like, within the narrative because it can't be part of the statements, which again is probably the sort of level of disclosure that leads to people. And I think you'll find there's enough examples out there that you don't need to overcomplicate this because the disclosure has probably already been given. It's just consolidating that here.
Michelle?
Before, in fact, in Canada, as you know, I would say 80% of the entities moved from Canadian GAAP to IFRS, and most of them have moved to IFRS plus IFRS 14. A few of them, I think 7 across the country, have moved before IFRS 14. There's 20 or 21 or 22 of the remainings are under US GAAP. So for the ones that have moved to IFRS, and when I compare what they were doing before under Canadian GAAP and what they're doing under IFRS plus 14, the quality of disclosure is far better than it was before. It has, that is for sure, it has improved the quality of disclosure. Presentation is another issue, I'll come back to that, but the disclosure is far better than before. It is comparable important, I think it's important enough, but it has improved. Presentation, what I've heard about across the country since IFRS 14 has been implemented, is the analysts, the users, the board of directors, each quarter you still have to remind them, what does that mean, that last line, how does that spill over all the other lines? It's very difficult for them to understand, you know. So what the way that you are thinking, at least what I've seen in the paper, having separate line, maybe not included in your revenue line, but in a separate line or separate lines, maybe in your revenue, and at least in the top part and in your bottom part, would be a much better presentation that we currently have. Balance sheet, I don't think what you're proposing is different than before, except it's just going to be reclassifying, you know, from the bottom to the top. So don't see any major issues there. P&L would be an improvement, that's for sure. And when I spoke to the industry about this meeting, they were saying, you know, they all find with the IFRS 14 presentation and people like it. Now, it might be interesting to hear from Tim if he needs more information that is currently presented under IFRS 14.
Thank you.
Go back to materiality on that.
Oh, yeah. Misha?
My own preference and the way that we provided our financial statements at AltaLink was to keep the balance sheet and the income statement as clean as we could and to provide the analysis, the reconciliations that Jane talked about this morning in the notes as opposed to trying to do them directly on either the balance sheet or the income statement. It serves both purposes, I believe, to do it that way. One is that from the point of view of somebody who wants to examine two companies, one regulated and one non-regulated, on a global basis, they have the ability to do that by looking at both income statements without having to look at which numbers do I have to pull off the income statement to do it. If they want to see what's special about a regulated company and they want to pull it out, that information is provided in the notes, and so they have the ability to do that. And I can send Jane a copy. I have them here in front of me. So I can send Jane a copy of the statements so she can take a look at them.
Excellent. That's excellent. Thank you. So any more ideas, comments on presentation disclosure? So we've heard...
Yeah, so some of the question I give you in my overview. I think what I'm seeing when you're asking about the level of disaggregation, what people are trying to do it is the main items of regulatory assets and liabilities, the material ones would be presented in what would be in the notes, but it would be a line item in the notes for each of the material assets and liabilities. And the rest, you may have an aggregation of the smaller numbers within the assets and within the liabilities. And normally you would see about six or seven assets or in six or seven liabilities. So it's a detailed level enough, I believe, for the readers, you know, to understand the regulations.
Phil?
I think from my perspective, I guess I talked before about the different regulatory mechanisms that exist in UK regulation. There's normally a sort of performance type adjustment mechanism, there's normally a revenue true-up mechanism, there's normally a sort of costs mechanism, and I guess I would see those as being the unit of account for sort of reflecting the adjustments both on the balance sheet and the income statement. I think in terms of the presentation of the income statement, I can understand and I can sympathise why people perhaps have a preference for separating out IFRS the revenue and the regulatory adjustments. I suppose for the people a little bit more distant to the accounts, it does pose the question of what's the difference in the income. And if you think about sort of, I suppose, the basic difference that arises from a sort of revenue timing perspective when you've got under or over revenue recovery, then from a sort of messaging perspective, you're going to need to draw a line underneath the revenue and the regulatory adjustments and get a subtotal to be able to talk about what is the meaningful revenue position year on year to be able to do a year-on-year comparison. So if you recover 100 units of revenue in year 1, 2, and 3, that's what you're expecting to do, but you only have 90 recovery in year 1 and 90 recovery in year 2, and effectively you're getting 120 in year 3, then from a user's perspective, it's not particularly helpful if you're sort of drawn to a number which is 90, 90, and 120.
Thank you, Phil. Thank
you. One small issue that we have not discussed is the presentation current versus non-current. That was one of your questions, am I correct? In the old Canadian GAAP, I think that was already, that was presented in the past. When we went to IFRS, we moved everything to non-current or at the end of the balance sheet. I think in US GAAP it's the same, correct? It's current and non-current. So, and some said in their submissions to me that, well, it might be difficult. I was telling myself, really? You were doing it before. And if you think about it, you know, if the regulator has already approved, so you know when you're going to get your timing.
Yeah.
What has not been approved, it's up to you to make an estimate. You know, you're going to be, you can do it, but you have to use an estimate. And some of the ones that you say that you will not be going back to the regulator before 3 years, well, you know, it's a non-current. And the ones that are maybe those pension, but maybe these ones you leave it non-current because you don't have to split that. It's one of the wars that, is it the one that you want me to fight to leave it non-current or current? Nobody ever really, they were insensitive to the decision on that one. You know?
Okay. Yeah. Thank you.
Dwayne? Yeah, to your point, Michelle, we do current, non-current today. That is not a problem. Shane, you already mentioned the discussion this morning about the detail. So in our footnotes, I have it in front of me, we provide line item detail of reg assets, 25 different reg assets, and then we have a small balance and an other. There's a few there. And then we have 10 reg liabilities. We break each of those out, current, non-current, in our detail records. So it's very, you know, we track it. It's very straightforward. On the other point about a separate line item on the income statement, I'm not used to it, obviously, in our current space. I don't know. It implies there's some importance of having comparability of the revenue line to non-regulated entities, and I don't really know what benefit that gives anybody. If you know it's a regulated entity, it's different than a non-regulated. And so having this distinction of revenue because of some difference because of the regulation, the timing of the cash flow, so we could do it. We could certainly do all of that presentation, but I'm not sure I understand the usefulness of it, other than a purist kind of, accountants in a room say we want to be pure, as opposed to what benefit it brings the reader.
So what are you going to be doing under ASC 906? Are you planning to...
Well, I don't agree with it there either, on the alternative revenue.
Okay,
alternative revenue, like 606 in America, or IFRS 15. US.
IFRS 15 in the IFRS.
Alternative revenue programs, we're going to break that piece out separately. I don't really understand what value it brings, but we're going to do it.
Okay.
So, are there any the jurisdiction you're operating in the US? Are there any regulated entities that also have non-regulated activities?
My company is an example.
Is that not then a case where you'd be mixing revenue calculated under one method for the regulated with revenue calculated under 606 for the non-regulated?
Yeah, but I guess...
You end up with these different ideas of what qualifies as revenue.
In my case, it's an interesting question. You are correct. That would mix it. But I still don't know how relevant that is, but... Because you have the reg assets and liabilities on the balance sheet, so you know what risks there are for reg assets of future cash flows, and you know what obligations there are. And to me, if you're giving disclosure in the notes, well, the current, non-current, so you know the timing a little bit, we do have disclosures if there are some that are more uncertain than others. And so I don't know what this balancing account essentially is providing in real usefulness relative to the stuff that's elsewhere in the financials.
I could see some subtotals with creative names appearing. Because that's what companies will do. I mean, that's what they currently do with natural reporting is, here's what I want to tell users of the accounts, right? Well, how do I do it from the context of the accounts? Sub-analysis, subtotals, boxes. You'll see an exceptional item.
Total revenue and other income. Or
these things, yeah. There is a bit that if actually the desire is, I want a total revenue number somewhere, then that's what people find a way of doing it. Thank you. Phil?
Sort of joking aside, sort of picking up on Michael's point there. why would companies want to draw subtotals? And that's because it's a subtotal that's meaningful and relevant. And therefore, I suppose that's why I was raising the point before in terms of the under or over recovery. If the revenue entitlement is 100 units, but you've under recovered, you've got an entitlement and an asset and a regulatory obligation for that extra 10 units, then effectively you're going to want to draw that subtotal to be able to give users a meaningful understanding.
Thank you.
A couple of different points, but obviously both related. One is going back to the current versus non-current analysis, and thinking back to this morning's conversation that there was a lot of evidence or suggestion that it's a lot of these things are relatively short term, but they can be tracked quite in quite a lot of detail. So Apologies to those that are not familiar with IFRS 14, but one of the disclosures that we've got in there, although we don't allow a current versus non-current split, we do ask for an indication of the maturity. And it's not just a less than 1 year and greater than 1 year split. We are looking for, are there time bands, 2 to 3 years? And we're not necessarily specifying the time bands, but I just want to double check that that is possible. And again, looking at Tim and putting Tim on the spot as the user in the group, whether it is useful information to get a more granular breakdown, not just of a current non-current, but a time scale within the non-current band.
I think more information is better than less information as to whether having led the horse to the water, they actually drink it. That's another story. So if it's being offered, I think people will take it. There are working capital lenders and bond investors, different audience, so different people will look at it different ways.
But you think that users would use the information? So it's not just that they like getting that information, it's that there is a particular use for the more granular information.
The bands of maturity.
If it's being prepared for another purpose or another audience, sure, let's have it. If this audience is the sole audience for it, then that's another question. Again, I'm from a commercial lending perspective, lending primarily on a working capital basis to A-rated entities. The amount of time you're diving into that granularity is not as much as other people might.
Do you view the current portion of the regulatory asset or liability as part of working capital, or do you think of it as something outside working capital?
Definitely aware of it. Again, the right to recover is important to us. Again, context is important, whether it's a big item for a small utility or a small item for a big utility. Again, in the context of a small island and that got wiped out by a hurricane and you're bridging insurance proceeds to help them rebuild their network, it'd be very important to somebody in Canada, or somebody in Florida, let's say, who didn't have a direct hit recently and is also using the proceeds for another purpose, probably less important.
Okay. Going back then to the other part of my point was in the profit and loss account, in the performance statement. What we've talked about today is some of these adjustments kind of relate more to a revenue true-up, whereas some of them seem to lean more towards the driver or the input is a cost recovery kind of true-up. And my knowledge of US GAAP, and I'm looking at Dwayne and others just to correct me if I'm wrong, but in US GAAP, some adjustments it specifies that you adjust them within the revenue line, others you adjust within an expense line. You mentioned 606, that was a little tweak that came out to say particular types, these alternative revenue adjustments, wouldn't go through revenue, they would go through a separate line item. Some cases, US GAAP, I understand, is silent, so you can choose whether to go through a revenue adjustment or an expense adjustment. And again, I'm just thinking, how do users cope? Do you break out then in the footnotes to the accounts where those adjustments have gone through? Is it something that users ask for, you know, which line in the P&L account these adjustments have gone through?
As a preparer, I've not come across that being a particular area of focus historically. The U.S. model, I know the board here had, for years ago when this first came up, had trouble. You know, we will put a contra expense and set up a reg asset, so then the expenses aren't really, I think there was a lot of concern about, well, then your expense isn't really reflective of what your true expense was. So I do get that aspect of the true up account. I do see there could be some benefit there because it's not as transparent and I don't, we don't really disclose, these reg assets all came out of this line in terms of the expense being deferred. I mean, some of it's there. I mean, if it's a big new reg asset, it's kind of clear where it came from, but it's not a specific requirement.
Okay. Thank you very much. Excellent. Let's move then to
that
the...
Sorry, Dennis.
He raised it after I looked at
that. Sorry, yeah. Yes, I'm sorry. I was late on that. But just a quick note on the income statement, and Jane, I think we talked a bit about this in IFRS 14 as well, that the depreciation expense itself, even though there's aspects maybe we can figure out the balance sheet rate aspect of it, when in my experience, when you go to looking at the depreciation rates themselves, there's a lot of moving parts in there, some of which may be deemed rate regulated associated. We talked a bit about mass asset accounting before, cost of removal, gains and losses being reflected in all of that. And in my experience of converting from US GAAP to IFRS, those things need to be evaluated, and it could create a lot of complexities in figuring out an income statement presentation that required those to be determined separately.
Okay. Thanks, Dennis.
Okay. Thank you, Dennis.